History of the Crusades. Episode 186, The Crusade Against the Cathars, The Last Cathar Perfect. Hello again. Last week we saw the imprisonment, trial and death of Bernard de Lisieux. This week we will close the door on the Cathar Perfect in Languedoc in the 14th century. We already saw, two episodes back, the execution of the Oti brothers and many of the Cathar Perfect from the network operating in the county of Foix. The brutal removal of the leaders of their faith caused a mass exodus of Cathars from the county of Foix, many of them making the journey over the Pyrenees into the safety of Catalonia in the Kingdom of Aragon. However, most of the Cathars of Montaigu stayed in Montaigu after the execution of the Perfect, including the Cathar priest Pierre Clerg. By the year 1315, 5 years after the execution of the Oti brothers, things had returned to a state of relative normality in the town. Pierre Clerg was now middle-aged, but still on the prowl for women in the village, juggling girlfriends while dodging angry husbands. On Friday the 10th of September 1316, the head inquisitor of Carcassonne, Geoffrey Darbley, died and was replaced by a man called Jean de Boon. But if the Cathars who remained in Languedoc thought that life was about to get easier because of this event, they would be wrong. Because 6 months later, on the 19th of March 1317, Jacques Fournier became the Bishop of Pamiers. We saw in last week's episode that a year or so after his appointment, Jacques Fournier will preside over the trial of Bernard de Lisieux. What the Cathars of Languedoc are yet to realise is that Jacques Fournier, a Cistercian, will go on to pursue the remaining Cathars in his domain with a zeal equal to, if not exceeding, that of the Dominicans. Now, Jacques Fournier was an ambitious man. Pamiers was only a little place, but if Jacques Fournier had his way, it would rise in prominence to be mentioned alongside the cities of Carcassonne and Toulouse. He had ambitions for Pamiers, and as Pamiers rose, so too would its bishop. In order to become an important centre for the persecution of heretics, Pamiers needed its own inquisitorial prison. Otherwise, suspected heretics would need to be taken to Toulouse for questioning and detention, taking them out of the control of Jacques Fournier and into the hands of the head inquisitor of Toulouse, Bernard Guy. So Jacques Fournier decided to build a prison. To finance his project, he raised taxes, telling his new flock that they would now need to hand over 1/8 of all their harvests and their livestock to the church at Pamiers. If the people refused to pay, and quite a few did, then he excommunicated them. Now, there were two types of excommunication doing the rounds at this time. If you were excommunicated because of failing to pay church taxes, you would start off under the lesser excommunication penalty, meaning you would be banned from attending church. However, if you persisted in your refusal to pay, the penalty could be upgraded to greater excommunication. This meant that all contracts you had entered into were now null and void, and if you died, you would not be accorded a Christian burial. If a year passed and you were still a greater excommunicate, then a charge of heresy would be automatically imposed on you, and you would be turned over to the Inquisition. Needless to say, most people ended up paying their taxes. By the end of the year 1318, Bishop Fournier's growing inquisitorial empire was in full swing. Despite the fact that a goodly number of Cathars were now living in exile in Catalonia, there were some Cathars who would soon find themselves in the crosshairs of Jacques Fournier's inquisitors. Most of the villagers of Montaigu were still Cathars, and there was still one perfect still preaching the Cathar faith, the man known to history as the last perfect, Guillaume Belibaste. Now, Guillaume Belibaste was not quite of the calibre of the Oti brothers or the perfect who had been within the Oti network, but considering the fact that he carried the Cathar flame alone, without guidance or support, he did a pretty good job. He had spent his early life as a shepherd, working in the high country in the Corbière, which overlooks the valley of the River Oude. However, in the year 1306, his life took an abrupt turn for the worse. He was brawling with another shepherd and ended up killing him. Thereafter, he became a fugitive. He joined up with a fellow man on the run, a Cathar who was fleeing from the Inquisition, and together they fled into the mountains. In the mountains, he met other fugitives, mostly Cathars hiding from the Dominicans. He became particularly friendly with one man, a perfect from the Oti network. Over the next year or so, Guillaume Belibaste gradually converted to the Cathar faith and stayed in the company of his new fugitive Cathar friends until eventually, after a couple of years, he was inducted as a perfect. He and his perfect mentor were both captured on suspicion of being heretics in the year 1309, but somehow they managed to escape from the custody of the inquisitors in Carcassonne. They then both fled to Catalonia. Guillaume remained in Catalonia, preaching to the Cathar refugees there, while his friend returned to Languedoc to perform his duties to the Cathars in the danger zone. However, he was arrested and subsequently burned as a heretic around the same time as the Oti brothers and the other perfect from the Oti network were suffering the same fate. So Guillaume Belibaste found himself alone, the sole surviving perfect, caring for his flock of refugees in Catalonia. Now, Guillaume was far from a perfect perfect. In fact, it would probably be more accurate to call him an imperfect rather than a perfect. Aside from the fact that he had killed someone in his youth, he had trouble keeping some of his vows, particularly the celibacy one. He kept up the pretense that he was celibate for around a decade, keeping discreet mistresses from time to time. But then he just seemed to throw his hands in the air and made the decision to stop pretending he was something he wasn't and openly began living with his girlfriend, a Cathar woman who had lost track of her husband while fleeing to Catalonia and who had befriended Guillaume when she arrived in exile. To Guillaume, there were four demons in the world who were trying to prevent the Cathar faithful from reaching their full potential. Those demons were the King of France, the Pope, the head inquisitor at Carcassonne, and Jacques Fournier, the Bishop of Pamiers. It was Guillaume's role to provide whatever comfort and guidance he could to the exiled Cathars, and to protect them from these demons. The demons themselves, of course, had a different view of the world. One of Guillaume's demons in particular, Jacques Fournier, had one particular goal in mind. What was that goal? To lure the last remaining perfect, Guillaume Belibaste, back into Languedoc, arrest him, and execute him on the grounds of heresy, And by the end of the year 1319, he had come up with a way of doing exactly that. Now, do you remember Sibylle Bayer? She was the dedicated Cathar whose house in Axe became the de facto headquarters for the Cathar Perfect. You might also remember that she booted her husband from her house when it became apparent that he didn't share her Cathar beliefs. And she also booted her children out of the house once they became old enough to talk, in case their chatter endangered the Perfect who were staying with her. Now, some of those children grew up to be faithful Cathars themselves, while others became bitter and grew up loathing the Cathar faith. One of her children who grew up twisted and bitter was called Anu Sikra. Anu had been taken to live with his father after his mother kicked him out, and they seemed to feed each other's bitterness, both blaming the Cathar faith for their misfortunes. Anud's father had taken his revenge on the Cathars by helping to organise the raid on Montaigu in 1308. Sibylle Bayer herself had been burned alive as a heretic sometime in the dark years of 1309 and 1310, but her house and property had been forfeited to the church, robbing Anu and his brothers of their inheritance. By October 1319, Anu Sikra had come up with a cunning plan to both seek revenge against the remaining Cathars and get back his inheritance. He presented himself to Jacques Fournier, the Bishop of Pamiers, and offered to bring in the last Perfect, Guillaume Belibust. It's also possible that at this meeting, Anu alerted Jacques Fournier to a fact about which the inquisitors before him had been unaware, that the little unassuming village of Montaigu was a hotbed of Cathars, existing under the protection of the village priest, who was himself, shockingly, also a Cathar. In his book The Yellow Cross, René Weiss points out that there is no conclusive proof that it was Anu Sikra who alerted Jacques Fournier to the activities of the Clerg brothers and the extent of Catharism in Montaigu, but it is a fact that Jacques Fournier started making specific inquiries about Pierre Clerg shortly after this time. Whereas for the past couple of decades, the Clerg brothers and the Cathars of Montaigu had managed to stay firmly below the Inquisition radar. Anyway, Arnoud's plan to lure in the last Perfect was a simple one. He would travel to Catalonia, pretending to be an exiled Cathar or Cathar sympathiser. With his obvious ties to the Cathar faith via his mother's service to the Cathar community, he believed it wouldn't be too difficult to convince the exiles of his sincerity. Once he had gained the trust of Guillaume Belibust, he would find a pretext to lure him back over the border into the county of Foix, into the waiting hands of the inquisitors. All he wanted in return was some financial support from the bishop and the inheritance that the church had forfeited from his mother. Unsurprisingly, Bishop Fournier readily agreed to this plan, and Anu made the trek over the Pyrenees into Catalonia. He arrived at the community of exiled Cathars armed with the following story. He had been a devoted son and was devastated when his mother had been burnt as a heretic. He had been forced into poverty when his mother's property had been confiscated by the church, and was now searching the community of exiled Cathars looking for his aunt, his mother's sister Alizés, who was a wealthy woman, and his brother Bernard, with the wish that both himself and Bernard would be able to move in with Alizés. The ruse worked. Arnoud was able to meet with Guillaume Belibust and the other senior Cathars and befriend them. It helped, too, that Anu was a skilled cobbler. He set up a cobbler's shop in the community of exiles and was able to be of service mending the shoes of the Cathar refugees. Here are the recollections of a senior Cathar, a shepherd from Montaigu called Pierre Maury, who had acted as a guide for the Oti brothers on many occasions. Pierre Maury arrived in the Catalan village of Saint-Martel in early November 1318 and was told the exciting news by his sister that a son of Sibylle Bayer had arrived in the village nearly a month earlier and had set up a cobbler's shop. When Anu arrived at Pierre's house, he was greeted warmly, and Pierre asked Anu if he really was Sibylle's son. When Anu confirmed this, Pierre stated, and I quote, "You are the son of an upright woman. I wish I were where your mother's soul is now, because she was the best and most dedicated of all the faithful," end quote. The two men shared some wine together, Pierre sharing his reminiscences of Sibylle, whom he had last seen 10 years earlier, and Anu telling Pierre the story of how he was in Catalonia looking for his aunt and brother. Pierre pointed out that it was good for the Cathars to stick together in Catalonia, where the last perfect was available to give them the consolamentum if they needed it. He told Anu that he was unaware of the whereabouts of his aunt and brother, but if Anu found them, he should encourage them to move to Catalonia, where they could enjoy the community of their fellow Cathars. After discussing some other matters, including the fact that, unfortunately, Guillaume Belibast was nowhere near as good a perfect as the Oti brothers had once been, the men parted ways. In his book The Yellow Cross, René Weiss confesses some astonishment about the fact that no one seems to have questioned Anu or been suspicious about his motives. There were enough Cathars living in Catalonia for someone at least to have known that Anu had been raised by his Cathar-despising father, and that his motives for being in Catalonia may not be as they seem. But, at this early stage at least, no one seems to have questioned Arnoud's story. The bounty-hunting spy for the Inquisition would remain in the community of exiled Cathars for an astonishing 2.5 years. During that time, he would be living with and befriending the people whom he intended to betray. René Weiss describes Arnoud's plan as a superbly executed long-range sting, which it certainly was. Every so often, Anu would make the journey back to Palmier to report to Jacques Fournier, but during the 2.5 years, his cover was never blown. Towards the end of this period, Anu refined his story. He was now looking not only for his aunt and his brother, but also his younger sister, Raymonda, his beautiful single sister who was looking for a Cathar husband. By Christmas of the year 1320, Arnoud was ready to spring his trap. He had recently spent a couple of months in Languedoc. In reality, he had met with Jacques Fournier, who had provided him with a sum of gold coins with which to lure the Cathars back to Languedoc. However, he told the exiled Cathars a different story. What he told them was, "Good news, I found my aunt, and she's just as wealthy and helpful as I had hoped she would be. Look, she gave me a pile of money to give to the Cathar cause. She's so pleased that you are all safe and well. She would love to come to Catalonia, but unfortunately she suffers from gout and can't travel. And guess what? More good news. I also found my sister Raymonda, who is living with my aunt. She would also love to travel to Catalonia, but she has to stay and look after our aunt. But wait, there's more. My sister is engaged to be married to Pierre Maury's cousin, Arnoud Maury, and she has asked me to invite the Maurys and Guillaume Bellibast to their wedding back in Languedoc in March. Hooray! With Arnoud dropping subtle hints about how his aunt was keen to share her wealth with Guillaume Bellibast to advance the Cathar cause, the bait was set. Guillaume Bellibast and the Maury brothers agreed to undertake the 9-day trip to accompany Arnoud Sicre back to his fictional aunt in Languedoc. It was on day 4 of the journey that the Cathars started to question whether Arnoud Sicre was being truthful about his wealthy aunt, and decided to put him to the test. They were staying in a tavern in a village, still in Catalonia, but on the road to Languedoc, when the Cathars decided to spike Arnoud's drink, hoping that when thoroughly intoxicated, Arnoud may reveal whether there was an aunt waiting for them, or whether he was going to betray them. Unfortunately, Arnoud was onto them from the get-go. He noticed them mixing his drinks and only pretended to drink the whole lot, then fell down next to the table, pretending to be drunk. One of the Maury Cathars then carried Arnoud outside and whispered to him, "Arnoud, why don't we trick Guillaume Bellibast and take him to the Inquisitors in the Sabates? He's a poor excuse for a perfect anyway, and we could make at least 50 or 100 pounds and live like kings." The not at all intoxicated Arnoud pretended to be outraged by this suggestion and said that there was no way he would stand by and let Guillaume Bellibast be betrayed. He then stormed inside and threw himself onto his bed, pretending to fall asleep. The Cathars then discussed the evening events amongst themselves, not realizing that Arnoud was listening in to every word. They came to the conclusion that Arnoud could be trusted and wouldn't betray them. The next day, they asked Arnoud, who was feigning a bad hangover, what he remembered of the past evening. Arnoud replied that he could remember drinking some wine, and then he could recall nothing until he was in bed. Now, on day 6 of the journey, the Cathars in the party had an unsettling experience. They saw a magpie on the road, and it crossed 3 times in front of them. This was a bad omen, and it made the Cathars anxious and quietened their chatter on the road. To make matters worse, a local fortune teller had warned Guillaume Bellibast before they departed not to make the journey. He had prophesied that if Guillaume left Catalonia, he would never come back. With 2 bad omens now having been presented to them, they all felt uneasy. Guillaume asked Arnoux in a joking manner to confirm that he was taking them to a good place. Arnoux said that he was, and the journey continued. By day 8, they had reached familiar territory. One of the Cathars began to get suspicious, as no other Cathar relations of Arnoux Sicre were there to greet them. However, he did overhear Arnoud say to the bailiff of the town, "It will be all right." This seemed to comfort the Cathar, and they all settled down for the night in their lodgings. The next morning, the bailiff entered the house where the group was staying and arrested everyone, including Arnoud Sicre. Arnoud told the bailiff to let the ordinary Cathars, the Maurys, go, saying that it was only Guillaume Bellibast who needed to be detained. The Maurys scampered off back to Catalonia, and Guillaume and Arnoud were shackled together in leg irons, a practice which apparently was quite common to prevent false allegations being made. Guillaume called Arnou a viper and a Judas, but Arnou managed to calm Guillaume down with more lies, saying that he needed to keep his strength up in case an opportunity arose for them both to escape. While the shackled Last Perfect and his bounty hunter were taken to the town of Axe, the two Cathars from the Mori family raced back to their community in Catalonia. And I mean raced. The journey back to their community in Catalonia was completed in half the time as their outward journey. They informed the devastated community of the betrayal of Arnoud Sikra and the arrest of the Last Perfect, Guillaume Belibust. Worried about their safety, the community scattered, many fleeing to Majorca or deep into the interior of the Kingdom of Aragon, or even further afield to other parts of Spain. Guillaume Belibust was burnt alive as a heretic in the autumn of the year 1321. There is no record of his trial, and little is known about what occurred between his arrest and his execution, which took place at Via Rouge, Termen, overseen by the Archbishop of Narbonne. Today, if you visit Via Rouge Termen, apparently there is a moving display paying tribute to the last Cathar Perfect, who was executed there in the year 1321. With the Last Perfect executed, the only job left for the Inquisition is to now clear out the remaining Cathars in Languedoc. Join me next week for what will be the second last episode in this series, or, if you like fancy words, the penultimate episode, an episode entitled The Last Cathars. Until next week, bye for now.